Let's Talk is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to Let's Talk, episode 63, brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network. Howdy, all. Father Corey Stika. Welcome to Let's Talk, our weekly SQPN community podcast. Glad you could join us. This week, we've got three panelists. So we got four of us this week. We should have a good conversation, I hope. First of all, we've got a returning panelist. Mac Barron is back again. How's it going, Mac?
Hello, Father. I am better than I deserve, as Dave Ramsey likes to say.
Well, that's a good thing, I hope. No, I'm kidding. And then we've got some new panelists. But if you're listening to some of the other SQPN podcasts, they should sound familiar because they have a podcast that we're going to talk about here in a little bit here on SQPN. Tom and Noel Crow, welcome. Welcome to Let's Talk.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, glad to have you both here. And, we are going to talk about their podcast. But, first of all, I'd like to let our new panelists kind of tell a little bit about themselves so those listening to Let's Talk can know about them. So let you both introduce yourself. However you want to do that.
Okay. Well, Noel, do you want to go first?
Well, sure. Okay. Well, I am the oldest of seven children, and I'm originally from Massachusetts. And I've actually known Dom Bettinelli for a long time, both because we're from Massachusetts, but we also went to Franciscan University of Steubenville together. So it's fun to be working with him now. So grew up in Massachusetts, lived there, worked there for a while, and then moved down to the D.C. area for a number of years. And that's where I got a degree in theology down there and started working in catechetics and really discovered a love for catechetics and especially catechesis of the Good Shepherd. So then I got introduced to Montessori through that there. And then about 3 years ago, I started dating this guy and lots of changes happened after that. So
I'm sure.
Yeah, you're telling me. Yeah. Short version of, we live in Steubenville now. Short version of my story. I'm from Youngstown, Ohio, originally, so just up the road. I actually didn't graduate from Franciscan. I didn't know the school existed, even though I grew up Catholic. Didn't know Franciscan University existed until I was actually living in D.C. I had moved down there after I graduated from college for a job, and a guy who ended up being a roommate of mine had Alumni Magazine. And, oh my gosh, there's a great Catholic school an hour from where I grew up that I had no idea about. But I actually was in seminary for 3 years, from 2005 to 2008 for the Diocese of Arlington, and when I discerned out of seminary, ended up moving into the house that former roommate from D.C., he then owned and lived in here in Steubenville, and got a job on campus. I've been there for 11 years now at Franciscan University, and met this gal about 3 years ago. And, and one thing, we bonded over a steak, and I like to say that after at the end of that dinner, it was a birthday dinner, at the end of that, I was like, well, I'm probably going to marry this. I hadn't thought that before. I was like, oh boy, here we go. And here we are. So, three years later, it's been pretty great.
Wow. Well, congratulations. You're practically newlyweds. That's
It's been just over 2 years, July 3rd of 2017.
Oh, that's great.
Did I get that right? July 3rd, 2017?
Yes. There were fireworks the next day, huh? Oh, I mean, no.
Oh, yeah. Yes, exactly.
There were, lots of them.
Fireworks for our anniversary every year.
Exactly.
Pretty good. Yeah. Fun fact, we both lived in D.C. area for 8 years, but only overlapped for 6 months. We never met each other down there, but
And we lived within a mile of each other without, put that together afterward. Like, you lived where? I was like a half mile from there.
That's
wow. So, yeah, but never knew each other down
there. That's funny. So. It's just kind of one of the chances, you know, but yeah, now you're.
Small Catholic world.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so now you're in Steubenville and you're working for the university, but you've got other side projects you're working on. And I hinted on it. But one thing we're going to talk about, obviously, is the American Catholic History podcast that you're doing here on SQPN. But that's an outgrowth of something else you worked on before, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm Irish and I've kissed the Blarney Stone twice. So I have this thing about telling stories. And Noelle has heard lots of my stories, and I always cheer internally when I find a story that she hasn't heard.
I'd like to pause for just a second and let the record show for our audience who cannot see Noelle that she was both nodding her head and rolling her eyes at the same time.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, what can I say? They're fun stories, though. But I love telling stories. It runs in the family. And in 2013, a friend, a lot of our listeners might know, Emily Stimson Chapman, who is a friend. She's an old friend of mine. She was commissioned by Catholic Vote to write a book called The American Catholic Almanac. And she asked me to be the researcher for it. So my job was to find a person, place, event, thing, document, whatever, something having to do with the history of Catholicism on what is now the 50 states, the land of the 50 states, something that could fit on every day of the year for the entire year for the 50 states, which, of course, when I first got this, like, wow, that sounds like a great project. And then it became incredibly difficult to find something for every single day. But it was an amazing project. So I had to find the items and find a bunch of information about them and kind of cobble together, here's my idea for what the story is, and then pass that on along to Emily. And she's the one who actually wrote the stories. I learned so much about, obviously I learned so much about American Catholic history in doing that. And, those stories, the ones that really grabbed me, kind of became part of my repertoire of stories I would tell people when they would fit into things. And, Noelle, after we got married, she would say, got all these stories in your head. We should do a podcast based on them. And then she pitched the idea to Dom, and Dom said, sounds great. Let me talk to the folks at SQPN. Oh, hey, we want to produce this for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Boy, that happened fast.
Yeah.
So the funny part about that was, right, so he would tell these stories, and I was just like, it just seemed like such great material for a podcast. And I had been, for a little while, driving back and forth, about a 6-hour drive to a place I lived temporarily from far away from DC, 6 hours. And so I had gotten into listening to podcasts. So as he was telling me, I'm just like, this just seems like great material. But the funny part is, when I mentioned it to Dom, I knew that he had been doing radio and podcasts in the diocese, and I knew that of Boston, and I knew that he had left his job recently, but I didn't realize that he was actually running a podcast network. So I didn't pitch it to him like, hey, can we be part of your network? I was just asking him, as somebody who had some expertise, what do you think? And right, by the time we got home from dinner, it was like, hey, we've got this all fleshed out, and send us a pitch for it. So that was kind of cool.
Now, either of you have a background in history?
My bachelor's is in political science, and I don't have a master's, but I just a love for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My degree at the university is called Humanities and Catholic Culture. So it's a liberal arts degree. So it includes history.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's great. How about do you have any like 45 second stories that you can tell in a minute and a half, Irish?
Yeah.
You're really testing me here. Yeah. 45. Let's see. Well, we have the ones we've already done. I mean, I could summarize some of those.
Yeah, and actually, that might be a good way to do it. Is right now you've only got 12 episodes out, but maybe summarize one or two of them so people can get like a taste of it.
Well, here's what I can say. This will summarize the entire scope of the project, and this is the biggest takeaway I had from the entire experience of doing this research project. We as Catholic Americans have no idea the giants on whose shoulders we stand. We really don't. the people who came to this country, who were born in the, who were born in on these shores, as I like to say, who made this, who built the Catholic Church in this country, built the individual churches, and built the faith and built the institutions. We have no idea what they sacrificed and what they did, what they put up with, what they endured. Whether it's the elements, when you know you have Bishop Flaget, who was the first bishop of Bardstown, which is now the Diocese of Louisville, Kentucky. His diocese, when it was established in 1808, was the entirety of what was then the United States, mm-hmm. west of the Alleghenies. Cool. And he had like five priests to cover the whole thing with him. And then some Dominicans were sent out, and they established something something in Ohio, what is now Ohio. But that's it. You know, mm-hmm. Eventually he tried to retire because he was old and he was tired. And the people said, you can't retire, we need you. So he acquiesced and he kept on doing it. But, you know, the line that I use is, we don't need to cross the ocean to find amazing stories of amazing Catholics who did amazing things that are edifying and that are faith-affirming and that build you up and say, you know what, they did that to make it possible for me to be Catholic here. Yep. When all the laws were against them, you know, people don't realize how anti-Catholic this country has been over the last almost two and a half centuries. Prior to the country being established. Mm-hmm. And this is something that's will be mentioned a number of times in our podcast episodes, and will be mentioned in one of the upcoming ones about Captain Commodore John Barry. For a time, the only place in the English-speaking world where the Catholic Mass was not illegal was Philadelphia.
Hmm.
Because the English penal laws made it illegal all over the British Isles, in Australia, and every colony except for Pennsylvania had anti-Catholic laws.
Wow.
But Pennsylvania, because of the Quaker establishment of Pennsylvania, they had a charter that said, no, religious liberty for everyone. That includes the Catholics. So Philadelphia, hmm. there are two parishes, St. Mary and St. Joseph. They were the only parishes in the English-speaking world where the Catholic Mass was legal for a time. Wow. And, you know, we as American Catholics weren't really taught all this stuff. It's such an amazing story. So it was definitely more than a minute and a half. That's the basic mm-hmm. message that I'd like everybody to know and that we try to impart through these, 10-minute episodes.
Well, it's interesting, too, because this is completely coincidence timing, unless Dom knew what he was doing. Dom might have planned this one. But the episode that just came out yesterday, as you listen to it, it actually just came out a few minutes ago before we recorded here, is about Stagecoach Mary. And she ended up in my diocese. where she was at is about 100 or 220 miles from me. So we're the Diocese of Great Falls, Billings, Montana, and she was just outside of the city of Great Falls.
Yeah, in Cascade.
Yep, in Cascade. So not that far. I know the priest that's down in Fort Shawn, Cascade, that area. You know, he's a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. He definitely fits the culture for would have been appropriate for her, because the front picture on their parish website is of him with the bishop in vestments and a cowboy hat on.
Nice.
That's great.
So, but it is interesting, though, that there are these stories, and we can look at them and go and relate to them because we know the places, we know the type of people mm-hmm. that are involved, the cultures that are involved, sure. you know, but in right. in hearing what we where we grew up and where we, you know, things like that.
Right. And we, as you're listening, probably notice we do try to take in stories from all different parts of the country and from different time periods to speak to that. And so hopefully people are listening, they're hearing really neat stories, but then they're mm-hmm. hearing ones like for you that, wow, this is right where I'm living right here. Mm-hmm. You know, people I know, things I'm familiar with. As a catechist, someone's worked a lot in catechetics, so Tom and I kind of talked about it too, the catechetical nature of knowing your history
right.
and the importance of knowing where you came from for that sense of belonging of pride and who we are. And for me, that's one of the things that's really important as we're telling these stories, that people are like, wow, like I have this history. This is who I am.
Right.
So,
well, that was kind of interesting because, you know, the second episode was on the Seal of Confession and how that was mm-hmm. settled here in the United States. And of course, in that episode, you talked a little bit about the importance of the seal and why we hold right. that. But
right. And that's another element of it, because, you know, there will be times we're talking about whether it's sacraments or it's truths of the faith, that it is an opportunity to talk about what is the seal of confession, what is the nature of a miracle, what is the real presence. I can't think of an episode where we'll specifically talk about that, but there may be one. But yeah, where we talk about, you know, why do Catholics believe this, and why did Catholics think it was important to fight to continue to be able to do X, Y, and Z, in at a given time and place.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's part of the nature of good storytelling. Like those make the best movies. Are the ones that they've entertained us and we enjoy them, but it allows us to have a conversation and it allows us to want to know more about the subject matter, even though the right. movie may be about, you know, okay, it's a story of hope and redemption, but it takes place in a certain era with a certain person, and it pulls us into the story so that we want to know more about the circumstances, the nitty gritty circumstances, and so, as you say, Noel, the sort of the catechetical nature of it. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, now you guys are obviously a married couple. Mm-hmm. How do yeah. you? How novel? You do a podcast of a married couple. That's,
gee, you don't know anything about that, do you, Mac?
That's a fantastic idea. So how do you divide up the sort of the heavy lifting?
Well, we both look for stories. It's sort of a discussion about what we're going to do next. Really, it's we both do research. We both look for items. When it comes to it, I do a lot more of the initial writing down the big chunks, coming up with, you know, the hook, the thing that's like, here's what we're talking about. Here's the thing we're going to say about the person to get people interested. And then when it comes to writing the dialogue, because we really do script out the dialogue pretty carefully, that's where the hemming and hawing and the discussion and
the fine tuning comes in.
We need to yes. say it that way. It's a work of art.
Tell us yeah. about
I would
the
never
fighting.
Say something.
Tell us this is finally the interesting thing. So tell us about the fighting. That's what I was waiting to hear. Like because
I would like well for instance, there was one recently. I think it was Patrick Payton, and I had a line for her to say that was like, I think I said, well, this guy was really interesting or something like that. She said, I would never say that. I said, okay, fine, but it worked. You should say it this time. She took it out. It didn't
fit. Here's the line I like to use. This always works. Just tell her, I'm your biblical authority. Do it this way.
Oh, boy.
Okay, don't do that, ever.
Yeah.
No one listening
No.
Except in jest.
You got to. You probably slept on the couch after saying that one, didn't you, Mac?
The couch, no, she just fell out of the bed now, so.
Yeah, so, good luck with that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, one thing I like about your podcast is you keep it short. You know, so many podcasts, yes. they keep going yeah. and going and going. And I love, you know, I love Captain Jeff Nielsen on Airline Pilot Guy, but he goes on for 3 hours, you know, but you keep your podcast short, 10 minutes. And which makes it nice because if you got a short drive, you're driving around town or whatever, you can listen to it. You got a couple of minutes, you can listen to it. It's got to be hard, though, to take these stories and pack them into 10 minutes.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Sometimes it really is like the Newt Rockne one that was like 8 minutes because there wasn't a whole lot more to tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean he converted. He was a devout man and he died tragically too young. So that one yes, there will be some like when we tell the story of Venerable Nelson Baker.
Mm.
I don't know if you're familiar with him, but a phenomenal story, multifaceted. But to give you the very short version. So now, you know, now here you go. Here's a 45-second version, if I can do it. Nelson Baker, he was in the Buffalo area, Lackawanna, New York. And he, let's see, which parts? He was in business with somebody else in like a feed and seed store. I think he took over a family store and made a bunch of money. Then he went to seminary, paid his own way, and eventually took over this parish, which needed all kinds of work, and all the vendors and creditors were coming to him saying, you know, we're demanding the money now. he ended up paying all the debts off with his own money, with his own fortune that he had earned, earned over the years. And with all those people who are pressuring him, demanding, you know, we need paid now, as he paid them, he said, and never come back to me for business again. Mm. Because if you can't give me a little more time, like I asked, then, you know, I don't want to do business.
Hmm.
But from there, that's just the very beginning. From there, he opens an orphanage. There were stories of, like, in the area, there were crisis pregnancies, the women, if they would give birth, they would toss the baby into the local river.
Mm.
And when they dredged the river, they found lots of little skeletons. So he actually had a hospital, and there were sisters there, and he had an atrium. He had a little bassinet, and he had said, put your baby in here.
What happened to your baby in here?
No questions asked. We've never come looking for you. Hundreds of babies were saved. When they needed to raise money, he had a great devotion to Our Lady of Victory and Saint Joseph, and he did this novena and said, okay, we're going to find oil here. And he buried a statue. And wouldn't you know, after he did this novena, he told the people drilling for oil, drill there. And they found oil. And they had money. They had money to finance everything and build an orphanage and build this and build that and build this massive basilica, Our Lady of Victory Basilica, which is a magnificent structure just outside of Buffalo.
So there are many stories that we will be getting out of Nelson Baker.
Well, yeah, she's heard about Nelson Baker a lot.
Is what he's saying. We will.
But that's just one example.
Can't distill it into 10 minutes. So that one will get broken up into many. But
is he the gentleman? Several months ago, I read most of The Fisherman's Tomb, and there's a Catholic oil baron that helps fund excavations of St. Peter's Basilica and helps sort of secretly fund the church's efforts in doing that during World War II.
I don't think that's him, but you know what? I'm going to have to look that up now. That'll become an episode soon.
There we go.
That's one that didn't make it into the almanac. So we'll have to look that up. But he did actually, Nelson Baker did sort of invent direct mail fundraising because he got the names. He wrote letters.
Yeah.
Well, this was the good side of it. He wrote to all the postmasters in the post offices across the country. And he said, can you give me the names and mailing addresses of all the old ladies who are over like 65 years old? Sure. So he got all these names and he would write to them letters saying, if you have any prayer intentions, just send me your prayer intentions. And if you want to send me 25 cents, that's great too. So he started getting in all these prayer intentions and all these quarters and all this money. A lot of the Our Lady of Victory Basilica and what he was doing there was actually funded by these 25 cent donations coming in from all of these ladies across the country.
Wow.
So yeah, just phenomenal stuff like that.
Oh, that's too funny. Yeah, so that's the fun though of reading, listening to some of these stories though, is getting to hear all these characters. I mean, you know, you'll get anything from, of course, you know, the pious priest to the just off the wall characters to, you know, of course, you know, things like somebody like Stagecoach Mary or a Shotgun Mary or, you know, someone that's really rough and tumble and, you know, but hey, they're still, you know, there's a holiness there.
Oh, sure. No, yeah. Stagecoach Mary, she'll never be canonized, that's for sure. But she was an amazing woman of faith. You know, she as we said in the podcast, she fell away from the faith when she was fired from working with the sisters because the bishop ordered the sisters to fire her because she was caught challenging the janitor to a duel.
Who hasn't challenged the janitor to a duel?
I know, really. How sensitive can the bishop be? But so she fell away from the faith. And then there was one particularly bad episode when she had a rough night and she came to the sisters and they took care of her. And the next morning she came back to the faith. And she died, 80 some years old. But she should never be canonized, but just an amazing story.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting hearing it. Yeah, I think that's the thing we need to remember too, is there's great, great stories of people that they aren't ever going to be canonized, you know, it's just because for whatever reason. But there's still great stories, things we can learn from.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's true. But as we started researching and looking at things, it really is actually amazing how many people are in the pipeline, if you will, of canonization from the United States. Like it just seems like every other story we're turning over and there's somebody who's a servant of God, they're venerable, they're investigating a miracle. And I think that's kind of what Tom was talking about before, that we don't even need to go to Europe. And we think about all the saints being overseas.
Right.
And there's so many here. So yes, you have the stories of the people who will never be canonized, but just have these really amazing things that they did, or were just super interesting characters like Stagecoach Mary. But then you just have all these other others who are, you know, somewhere along that process. Yeah. So it's really neat.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard of the Georgia Martyrs?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're on the list. I'm not sure where on the list, but they're on the list.
Ooh, very good.
My wife and I, she's from the eastern side of the state. And so they always used to vacation on Jekyll and St. Simons. And so, you know, that's the territory. And so you can go on walking tours and see these very small memorials to them, but they're there.
Sure. Well, especially since, you know, they were martyrs to defense of marriage. So, you know, considering what's going on with, you know, the defense of marriage these days, that is a good one. Kind of like we did the Seal of Confession with Father Coleman.
Yep.
You know, when we want to get into defense of marriage, the Georgia Martyrs are an obvious one to turn to.
Sure. Oh, very, very interesting. Now, to kind of shift a little bit to get, you know, we got to know about Tom's kind of pet project more than anything else. But Noelle, you're also involved in some very interesting things there with your Hilltop Children's House.
Hilltop Children's House. Yes, we actually start next Monday, our second year. So, yeah, it's sort of interesting. I mentioned before that when I was down in the D.C. area, I became involved with Catechesis of the Good Shepherd, and through that got to know Montessori philosophy and just to know how amazing it is for children and how much it just really respects who a child is and gives them so much independence and confidence and ability to think and to explore things in different ways. And so when Tom and I were dating, I moved to Steubenville and we got married about 10 months after that. And I was trying to find a job here. And believe it or not, with Franciscan University here, there actually really aren't any catechetical jobs. And that's where I had been doing most of my work. And so the other part of it was that the neighborhood where we live is a really interesting neighborhood. We live kind of on the half of the neighborhood where there's a lot of Catholic families, there's a lot of homeschooling families, there's a lot of professors who work at the university. But if you go about a block and a half from where we live, now you're in a neighborhood where there's a lot more low-income people, there's a lot more Section 8 housing, there's drug dealing, there's gangs. And unfortunately, in the 2 years since we've been married, there's also been two shootings and killings of children. And so after the first one, it was actually on Palm Sunday, and I said to Tom, if we're going to stay here, I first said, we're not staying here. That was my first response. Of course, you know, I'm like, I'm from Massachusetts and DC. This is not, or Northern Virginia. This is not my normal.
Yeah.
And then I said, if we're going to stay here, we're going to do something to help. And I have this training and it seems a shame to be trying to find an office job and not using the training that I've spent time and money develop, you know, getting and everything that I know can help children. So there was a little one-room church that was for sale. It's just a one-room building that was for sale half a block from where we live. And we went and looked at it and said this would make a perfect Montessori classroom. And Tom, being the amazing man that he is, said, okay, I'll support you in doing that. And so we made an offer. It was accepted, raised the money to buy the building. Now in Steubenville, housing prices are not very high, so we didn't have to raise a lot of money, but it was still a good amount to raise that money. And we've thankfully been really supported by our family and some friends to keep the money coming in so that we can not have a lot extra, but have enough every time we've needed to get to the next step to, you know, make that next step. So we did that. We got married in July of 2017. We bought this signed a contract on this building of November of 2017.
We formed the nonprofit around December.
Formed the corporation, nonprofit. Closed on the building in March of 2018. Opened with our first class of two children in October of 2018.
Wow.
And then we ended the year with actually seven children. We actually every couple of months somebody was coming to us and saying, "Can we bring our children?" and then we are getting ready to open next Monday with our second group of children. We have eight children to start our second year, so we're slowly building it, but it's been quite a project, and Tom and I for the most part, we have a board, but for the most part Tom and I do everything. From I'm the teacher, we purchase or make all the, you know, the materials we need. Tom is mainly the work crew on doing all the renovations that are still needed, and, you know, have been needed and still needed on the building, with some help from friends and family. And he's the main marketer and the main driving force at getting our first. We had a big Mardi Gras fundraiser in the Saturday before Mardi Gras, so he's the kind of the driving force in making all of those things happen. So yeah, we've been wearing lots of hats and making this happen, while also Tom working full time and I've been working part time.
And we're also trying to adopt, because hey, you know, we don't have enough going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, and we're hoping to adopt as well, or at least working on that process. So yeah,
well,
we're doing a few things.
That's wonderful. Man, my hat is off to you guys. That's very commendable. Now, what's the overlap between your background in catechesis and mm-hmm. Montessori? Draw us a Venn diagram, Miss Educator. Yeah.
So, well, as I was working in catechesis, I kind of went into it the same way everybody does when I needed a job. I was going to graduate school for theology, so that seems to fit, right? So I was doing it, and I didn't know a whole lot about catechesis besides what I knew about teaching, because I had taught high school to some extent. But as I was going through it, I was noticing, especially with the younger children, I had these two teachers who would come to me and say, "Can you make me this? Can you make me that?" And they weren't using the textbook that we had. Mm. And I had one teacher who was using the textbook with a bunch of, you know, a class of six-year-olds. And she was having all these behavior problems because it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon and she was, you know, going through a textbook with six-year-olds. They don't want to sit still. So I was just like, this is not working. This idea that we have of using textbooks with young children, it's not working. Right? I have this two teachers who are just not really using it at all. There's one who's trying to use it. It's not working. There's got to be something better. And that's really where I discovered the catechesis of the Good Shepherd, and discovered this hands-on individual way of transmitting the faith that respects scripture and liturgy, presents it to children, and lets them really just absorb it by putting their hands on things that we use in the Mass, by putting their hands on physical representations of the figures from the scriptures, so that they're able to, in their reality-based way, bring that into themselves. And so through that, I got to know more about Montessori's philosophy. Not just for catechesis, but also for academic learning as well. And this really hands-on, tangible, individual learning. Because one thing you learn in catechesis is no two people are on the same faith journey. Mm. And really academically, no two people are exactly on that same journey. There might be a few more parallels there, but you know, when it comes to faith, everyone's in a different place, and so trying to teach everyone the same thing is really difficult. And so I just really fell in love with it. I also had, you know, have still and had at the time young nieces and nephews. I have 16 myself, and Tom has 3, so combined we have 19. nieces and nephews, ages 18 to one. So anyway, and we're both old. I'm the oldest. He's the second oldest, and you know, large family. So we've had lots of experience of seeing children. When I started hearing Montessori philosophy and her planes of development and what she would say about the 0 to 6 child and the way they react to things and the things that they need, it just spoke so much to me because I had just been with my nephew who was 6 when I moved to DC and started studying. And I was just like, everything, I was like, yep, that's him. That's him. Like, I've seen that with him. And mm-hmm. So I just developed a love and I just started going more and more into it.
I've had the opportunity to experience the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd a little bit here again in this diocese. We've got a couple of parishes that do that. And it is a very interesting learning method, teaching method, because it really, mm-hmm. it lets the kids kind of take the lead on it. You know, the teachers are there more to help guide the children than they are to actually teach. You know,
right,
take out your book and fill in your letters. No, it's, you know, you got experience. They get to experience this for themselves.
Right.
Right.
And one thing I would explain to like somebody, I was trying to explain to them and I say, well, think about it this way. You can tell a child Jesus loves you and they're going to believe that because young children, they believe you when you say something, right? They take it in. They don't doubt. They don't say, well, maybe, maybe not. You know, they're very young. They're going to believe that. But you can tell a child the parable of the Good Shepherd. You can give them a figure of a Good Shepherd and a sheep and let them go back to that and have the shepherd and the sheep and see how they work together. And they might hear it again, or they might just be absorbing the shepherd and the sheep and how they are together. And that child who has had that experience of physically holding the shepherd and the sheep and thinking about how the sheep know how the shepherd knows the sheep by name and how the sheep follow the shepherd because they know his voice, are going to know that Jesus loves them in a way that is so much deeper and so much stronger than a child who simply had a teacher tell them Jesus loves you. That's the difference.
Yeah,
I can attest to this with an anecdote. I went to the same church camp from like the age of 2 until I was about 14. And the grounds of the same church camp is actually where I met my wife. It was a separate camp, but they used the same facility. And we studied the, and when I must have been 7 or 8 or something. We studied the parable of the wise man and the not so wise man. They both built their houses on different, you know, different substances, right? And the guy that built his house on the rock, obviously his rock withstood the storm, or his house withstood the storm. And we all walked away with pebbles. Like they gave us these rocks, you know, right. And my little rock, I had in my pocket and I had it the whole day. And, eventually I went to the bathroom and I accidentally dropped my rock into the toilet. And, I was in a real quandary because, you know, you have to flush the toilet, and I flushed the toilet. And my rock stayed behind. And so I was able to go to my aunt, who was my teacher, and say, here, this rock right here, I dropped in the toilet and it stayed. She said, yeah, it's great, Mac. Have you washed that rock? You know?
Yeah, have you washed your hands?
So yeah, you're right. The tactile nature of it really sticks in the mind of children.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, for me, I didn't know much. I heard of Montessori and I'd never heard of Catechesis of the Good Shepherd before meeting Noelle. But for me, seeing her passion for it and learning about what Montessori is all about and what she loves to talk about, the planes of development. Get her talking about planes of development, she'll be there for a long time. But the way children progress through how they learn and how they develop their thought process. Anyway, I'll probably screw it up. But anyway, just listening to her talk about it and then seeing some of the materials and seeing the way she interacts with children, one of the ones that really struck me, that I didn't get it at first, but now I do, was when she said, you don't compliment, you don't say, good job. You don't tell kids, you did a good job. What you do is you tell them what they did. So you don't just say, if they stack blocks correctly, You don't say, good job. You say, you stacked the blocks correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't just affirm, you know, you did a good job in the sort of ambiguous, non-committal, non-specific way. You indicate to them that the thing that they did well.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a much deeper impact. It actually means something. Yes. That you have recognized what they've accomplished, acknowledged, affirmed that it was well. And that, you know, that sort of thing. Then also the way that Montessori encourages children to take responsibility, not just for themselves and their environment, but for each other. You know, because we were, our Hilltop Children's House is just ages 3 through 6.
Mm-hmm.
And we only have 3 and 4 year olds right now. But the ones who are coming back from last year will take some involvement in showing the new kids how to do the things that the returners learned last year. So there's this communal aspect of, we've learned this, just frankly, as tradition. Mm-hmm. I'm giving to you that which I received. Yeah. I'm passing on to you that which I've learned. And it's community, taking responsibility for your own learning and for the learning of your peers. So that's seeing that. And that, frankly, you know, Noelle mentioned the rough aspect of the neighborhood we live in. That, frankly, is part of why we're so confident good for our community. Because there are a lot of kids who don't have that sort of structure at home.
Right.
We're really hoping that this can provide some of that structure so that when they go into whatever school they go into after they leave us, they'll be in a better position to learn there, take responsibility for their own learning, to be better, you know, children of their parents at home, et cetera. So that's, all of that has been something that's been really wonderful for me to learn about how this works.
Oh, very interesting.
Also, I call her the toddler whisperer. She chuckles because I've never seen anybody like a child is flipping out, and I mean I can attest to her patience. She's patient with me, but I've never seen a person who's as good as she is at like child is flipping out, and she just gets down on one knee, starts talking in this quiet voice. The kid just like zen. Medium. Wow. How'd you do that?
Just because you can't hear the threatening words that she's telling that poor child doesn't mean she's amazing.
If you don't
behave, I'm going to rip your hands off. Yeah.
So Mac, are you sharing your parenting skills here?
Don't look too closely at anything, Father.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't pay attention to that man behind the curtain. Yeah.
Well, is there anything else any of you'd like to share about this or the history, or before we go on to our pick of the week?
Goodness.
What's the name of the show? I don't know that we've actually said officially the name of the show so that listeners can find it.
The name is very complicated. For what it is, you know, it's all about American Catholic history. So we called it very creatively American Catholic History.
Mind blown.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know, seriously. I actually really wanted to call it On These Shores because I think that's a great name for it, like more poetic. But I got voted down on that. So I still use that phrase. And if I ever write a book, that'll be the name. But nice. No, it's just called American Catholic History.
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out. We'll have a link to that and to your website for the Hilltop House as well. So
yes,
people can check all of that out. We'll have that in the show notes. And of course, obviously, we encourage you to listen to the podcast on sqpn.com or wherever you find your podcast. And so this is a good time right now to take a quick break before we do go on to the picks of the week. And thank you for listening to Let's Talk and American Catholic History and all the SQPN community podcasts. We do greatly enjoy bringing these podcasts to you, and we hope you enjoy listening to them. If you do like what you hear, please give us a thumbs up. If you see if you're listening to this through the Facebook post, give us a thumbs up. YouTube, same thing. Give us a like there if you listen to it there. Leave comments. We enjoy the comments. We want to hear what you think about some of these issues. You know, so there's a lot there. You know, we can definitely hear from you and keep the conversation going, both in this episode, this podcast, and any of our podcasts. We definitely want to hear what you think. And I'm sure Tom and Noelle would be more than interested in any possible topics you might know of American Catholic history. You know, as for future shows, you could drop them a line as well for feedback.
Oh, sure.
They'd love to hear that. If you like our shows as well, please share them with your friends. Let people know about them. We want to expand our audience. We want more people to listen to our shows, to hear about Catholic history in the United States, hear what we have to say at Let's Talk, the Secrets of shows. Of course, we always love, you know, getting people to listen to those. Please do drop a line to your friends and let them know what we're doing here and what you like to hear. Well, of course, you know, with SQPN as a organization, there is still the monetary aspect. We enjoy our listeners, but we greatly enjoy our supporters, those who help us out, especially at this time when we are still struggling a little bit to meet our budget for the year. We're improving, but we still need a little bit of help for that. And so we are in the middle of a campaign to increase our Patreon supporters. And at this point, I'll turn the mic over to Dom for a brief message.
This is Dom Bettinelli of the StarQuest Production Network, and we need your help. Over the past year, we've grown by leaps and bounds. Some of our podcasts, like Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, are among the most popular shows we've ever produced. But that success is in danger. Creating a dozen shows has caused our expenses to rise, and right now, we aren't making ends meet. We must reach the financial break-even point if we're going to continue. If our reserves are depleted, we'll have to cut back many of our shows. We might have to shut down entirely. That's why it's crucial we hear from you right now. Please go to sqpn.com/give and click the Become a Patron button to make your monthly pledge. If you're already a supporter, please consider increasing your pledge. The need is urgent, so please go to sqpn.com/give. That's sqpn.com/give.
Well, thank you very much, Dom, and I do encourage everyone listening to join our Patreon campaign at sqpn.com/give. As we do every week, I would like to thank some of our Patreons: Andrew E., Christopher V., Natalie B., Cesare T., and Colleen H. Thanks to all of you and all of our supporters and all of you who help us keep this going with your financial support. Without it, we can't keep the lights on, figuratively speaking, anyways. So thank you very much to everyone who is supporting us at this time. Well, let's go on to our pick of the week, and we'll go ladies first for the picks. So, Noelle, what would you like to share?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, this is my first time doing a pick. So, but I was thinking about, Tom and I were just down in Virginia, down in Front Royal, Virginia, this past weekend at the Appaloosa Music Festival, which was a really great time. Friends of ours, Scythian, if you haven't heard their music, you should definitely check them out. Their brothers, Danny and Alex Frederica, and a couple of other guys who play with them. Danny and Alex are actually Ukrainian, but they play lots of Irish music, as well as other folk music. But they've been putting on for 5 years now a music festival from different acts that they've met as they've been on the road for the last 15 years. And one of the neatest things about it was so family friendly. Lots of big families with kids, and they've really priced it to make it available to families. So over for this year, but they're getting ready for the next one next Labor Day weekend. So something for people to check out, a lot of good music and family friendly event.
How do you spell the name of the band that you mentioned? The band you mentioned was Scythian?
Scythian, yes. It's Scythian. Scythian is, I believe it means wanderer, and I believe it's a Ukrainian word or somehow connected to the Ukrainian heritage, meaning wanderer. That's the name of their band. They actually also do, it's the same guys, but they also do music for children, and their children's music is called Cake for Dinner. And it's really great because they use, a lot of classical or music or folk tunes, but they put kids' lyrics to them or turn them around. So it's not like the kind of really cheesy, really dumbed down music that you sometimes get for kids' music. This is real classical folk music that they've put together for kids. So they're really great. They have two albums of children's music as well.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, definitely check it out. We'll have a link to the website for the music festival, and I'm sure you can find more information about all the bands there, too. So, yeah, we'll have that in the show notes. Tom, what would you like to share for your pick?
Well, my pick actually is the book I mentioned earlier, The American Catholic Almanac. It is a story a day, 365 stories. You know, we're doing this podcast, and the episodes come out once a week, so it'll take us a few years to get up to 365 stories.
Good deal.
But you get all 365 right there. Now, of course, the difference is these stories in a book, they take about a minute and a half, 2 minutes to read page, page. It's a story per page. Podcast takes long, so we get a lot more information into our podcast. But the book, it's you know, there's every day of the year, it's actually, you know, January 1st, January 2nd, January 3rd, right on through. Story of Day for the Year, American Catholic History. It's by Image Books. It was published in, I want to say, 2014. Anyway, great book. I highly recommend it.
Oh, very good. Very good. Yeah, definitely check that out. That's going to go on my list of all the books I need to buy. Oh, always seem to find more and more books to buy. That's for sure. So, Mac, what do you have for us this week?
It's a good problem to have.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
My pick, man, if you're about 40 years old, give or take 5 years or so, then The Dark Crystal made up a huge part of your childhood.
Yes.
And Netflix has just dropped a 10-episode series based upon the same property, and it's a prequel to the events of the film The Dark Crystal. It's called The Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. Ooh. And I've only seen two episodes. They're all about an hour long, and it is fantastic. If it holds up, if the remaining episodes are as good as the first two, the production quality is just out of this world, and it ticks an awful lot of nostalgia boxes. It's just, I can't say enough about it. I'm thoroughly, thoroughly impressed. So that's The Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. You can find it on Netflix.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see here. 40, give or take. Yeah. I'm in the middle of that.
I'm 43. And so I saw this over and over and over again, like on HBO on my parents' satellite dish in the country of South Georgia, you know, one summer, and just loved it. And that, you know, Chamberlain going, is an indelible part of my childhood.
Yep.
Oh, very good. Very good. Yeah, definitely have to check that out. Of course, that means I'll have to reactivate my Netflix account. Maybe I'll wait till they send me one of these. Hey, you can get another free month if you reactivate your Netflix account. Oh,
right.
Exactly.
That's the way to do it. I do that with Hulu too. It's like, yeah, I'll take another free month. Sure. But let them pay for it and then watch what I want. Binge what I want. Well, very good picks.
Binge and then cancel.
Exactly. Watch what I want. Move on. So my pick, it's a little booklet. It's actually one of these books that have been reprinted. Recently, I started celebrating the extraordinary form of the Mass, a low Mass, on Saturday mornings. We hadn't previously had any kind of Mass on Saturday mornings, so I figured that'd be a good time to do it, to once a week offer the low Mass. And right now, I've just been doing it for a couple of weeks, and we've starting to get some people showing up and enjoying it, so that's a very good thing. Well, one thing I'm going to need to do here soon is I don't have any servers. It's just me up there right now. You know, that's not the ideal. There's supposed to be a server, but of course the low Mass, extraordinary form, server training is very different than it is in the ordinary form. Ordinary form, you can train a server, have a good decent training in about half an hour. Extraordinary form, not so much. It's much more difficult. They have to learn some Latin. They have to learn, you know, there's much more movement by the servers in the extraordinary form. They're doing a lot more. And so there's a book that was published originally in the 1920s, and then was updated in the 1960s, How to Serve Low Mass and Benediction. Just a little pamphlet. Relatively recent, I think within the last 10, 15 years, Angelus Press started republishing this. Great little book for teaching the kids, because, of course, it's got lots of pictures. Kids loves lots of pictures. It's got pronunciation of the Latin. So you see the Latin, and then for amen,
it's got it phonetically.
Dash men, you know, things like that. O, ra, re, pro, me, you know, it's got it. So the kids can pronounce it slowly and learn it and eventually start picking them up. Because, of course, a lot of the Mass is the servers responding to the priest. You know, it's the priest and the servers back and forth. So they've got to know these pronunciations.
So, Father, I think what Tom wants to jump in and tell you is that he uses that book because he actually trains all the extraordinary form servers on campus at Franciscan University. Awesome.
Nice.
And at our new at our local parish as well.
Well, not only that, but that's the book I learned on when I was 7, 8, 9 years old.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah. So back in the mid 80s, that's so when I got this gig training the servers, the extra hat that I wear on campus. But yeah, that's the book I went to. And
nice.
I completely endorse it.
Yeah. Well, it's nice because it's not just the words and the steps servers have to do. It talks about things like what is in the sacristy? What are all the things mm-hmm. that the priest uses as far as, you know, how does the priest set up the chalice? The priest or the sacristans
right.
set up the chalice.
What are the vestments?
Yeah.
What's the order of the father puts the vestments on?
Exactly. Yes. So it's a lot of
it's all in there.
It's a lot of really great stuff, and it's not a big book. It's 46 pages. You know, it's a little tiny thing.
Are the servers portrayed in the pictures? Are they portrayed as Skeksis or Gelflings?
Yeah, no.
It's just boys. Or podlings. Maybe they're podlings.
Different subject. Sorry, no. But
just to bring it all together.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyways, if you're obviously, you got a couple of endorsements for this book, but I'm just hoping to give this to my server, future server, so that they can learn. And of course, you know, say it too, is it doesn't have to be children serving. Adult men can also serve if the need arises. Although it's generally preferred to be kids, of course.
Right. I'm training college students.
Yeah.
And they pick it up pretty well.
You know, so it's anyway. So if you're in a parish like mine where you're trying to get the extraordinary form going, this is one good thing you can give to your priest. And by the way, I will throw a pitch of that is if you think your priest is even remotely interested in extraordinary form, give them encouragement. The only reason why I'm doing it now is because I've had the encouragement of parishioners and saying we would like this at least once a week, you know, and much I'd love to do it where it actually was a Sunday mass that my schedule just doesn't allow it now, but I can do it Saturday morning. So. Anyway, so there's one resource you can give to your priest to help out. Say, hey, I'll help train your servers, and here's the book we'll use. So that's How to Serve the Low Mass and Benedictions, written by Reverend William O'Brien. And again, it was originally written back in like the 20s, I think it was. I was looking here. 1931. So it's obviously been used for a long time in the American church. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, thank you all very much for coming on. Tom and Noel, where can people find you?
Well, sqpn.com/history and also hilltopchildrenshouse.com.
Excellent. And again, we'll have those links in the show notes. And Mac?
Well, you can go to macandcatherine.com if you want to, but most people find us by subscribing to the Catholic in a Small Town podcast, where you can find 513 episodes.
Wow.
And very shortly, you can also find the What We're Dealing With podcast. It's the show that we've been doing with Greg and Jennifer Willits from the Adventures in Imperfect Living podcast. Mm-hmm. Up until this point, it's only been available to our patrons, but we've gotten so many of our patrons saying, this is great. You guys need to give this away. You guys need to put it out as a regular feed. And so that should drop this week.
Oh, nice. Nice. I have to go get caught up on those while they're still Patreon special. Oh. Admittedly,
thank you, Father.
I will admittedly say that it's through Greg and Jennifer, so I haven't supported you guys yet.
Jeez, this guy. No accounting for taste.
No, exactly. So I'm Father Corey Stika. You can find my homilies at frcorey.org. I'm on Facebook, Father Corey Stika. Fr Corey Stika is my Twitter handle. If you'd like to send us feedback and Let's Talk Again, you can leave it on our SQPN Facebook page or on the SQPN YouTube channel. But you can also send us email at letstalk@sqpn.com. Thank you all very much for listening, and God bless.